This week on the show, it's October, and that means one thing. All four major sports are in action, and we've got it all for you. A Celtics season preview with CLNS Media's Nick Gelso, a heads up of what's coming for the Boston Red Sox in their playoff series, the Bruins drop puck on their regular season Thursday night, and those Patriots, man, that defense. Lebowitz, you worried?
A little bit.
We'll get to it and more. Calling It starts right now. Welcome into Calling It. Alex Barth, Alex Lebowitz, the show we've been waiting for, Lebo. We're hitting on all four sports today. You excited?
Big week. It's a huge week.
Doesn't get much bigger than this.
Thursday night's going to be, I'm going to have three screens going at least.
At least three screens. It is October 2nd, the day of the record. I'm Alex Barth. He's Alex Lebowitz. This is the Calling It podcast. We had the Patriots this week. The Red Sox are going to be in the playoffs. The Bruins start. But let's start with the Boston Celtics because we have with us in studio, a rare in-studio guest for us. Nick Gelso of CLNS Media. Nick, thanks for coming out.
Yo, bros, this is nice, man. You have a studio with padding, and it's like, I hope I sound good.
Yeah. it's not going to echo. This is absorbing everything.
You can't sound bad on this show, I'll tell you,
man,
that.
I'm thrilled to be out here. It's a good time.
So Celtics' first preseason game is Monday night. Obviously, we're recording before, so apologize if we don't hit on any specifics, but I think we'd rather preview the 2017 season than just one preseason game. And Nick, let's start here. There's a lot of hype for this team this year. It seems like, it feels like 2007 again. Which team had more hype going into the season? We were in middle school when that happened, me and Lebowitz. You'd remember better. Which
I'm
team?
The old man.
That's not what I'm trying to say.
No, man, I would say probably 2007. There was definitely more hype. I think locally there's a ton of hype for the Celtics' new look roster, but I don't know that nationally they're being given the credit that, or I don't know if the credit is the right word. They're not giving maybe the attention that the 07 team was. 07 was, I mean, don't forget, 22 years of purgatory, basketball purgatory. So 2007 was like, geez, I don't even know. The coming of Christ? What? Yeah, I don't even know how to put that. I hope no religious people get upset now.
Do you think maybe the 2017 is being undersold a little bit?
I think if they are, it's a good thing because, you know, going into the season, you got a guy like Kyrie Irving should have a giant chip on his shoulder, especially a lot of the nonsense LeBron has spewed out at Media Day.
It's been fantastic.
Yeah, it has been. And, you know, I mean, I think they have something to prove. It's a new roster, though, and I think we have to be patient coming in. You know, they may struggle a little bit initially out of the gates, but it's the end of the season that's most important, not the beginning. So do I think they're being underhyped? I don't know, man. It's so hard because, like, ESPN will hype on the silliest stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right now, no one's being hyped, but the guy's kneeling during the national anthem. So
this is true.
You know.
So how long's that struggle going to last? When are we going to see this new-look Celtics look like the team that they should be?
Oh, I think, you know, traditionally Brad teams come out of the gate slowly to begin with. So I usually by the end of November we're all saying on the post game shows on CLNS and everywhere is like, when are the rotations going to be situated? And right now you have Morris who's kind of in flux. And
yeah, what's the deal? When should we expect to see him? Will he be good to go for opening night?
I don't know. He's in trial right now. I mean, I would imagine that the team is, they're not going to sit there and say how concerned they are, but of course they're concerned. I really don't know. I mean, it comes the maximum sentence of what, 12 years?
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, we'll see. We'll just see. I'm not a lawyer. I can't answer that, but yeah, I mean, I think it's probably, you're not going to see this team hit stride till after Christmas. I think so. I think you don't be shocked if they're just over 500 or a 500 team leading into the holidays.
That, so knowing that, do they need to be a one seed? People are talking about them being the team that can finally beat Cleveland. Do they need to be the
Why
one seed to do it?
Why do they need to be the one seed? Do you think? I mean,
because they were last year.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, and they lost. I mean, the point is, the Garden is the sixth man, right? It's a great place to play, but if you have guys with strong mental fortitude, they could go on the road and win too. And I don't think they need to be the one seed. I think they listen. I don't remember a more pathetic Eastern Conference than probably the Pistons in like the mid 2000s, right? I think that was the first time maybe a first seed in the Eastern Conference wasn't 50 wins or was just right there. So I don't really know. I don't really think it matters all that much. Here's my thoughts. I think, talk about chip on the shoulder, LeBron is going to come out with a major chip on his shoulder. He's going to try and average a triple-double in the regular season to one-up Wes from last year. And then he's going to kind of fall apart in the playoffs because his health isn't going to hold up. I mean, that's the ideal situation for the Celtics to get far into the playoffs. But no, I don't think they need that one seed.
So you think LeBron's going to, you know, go against what he's done in years past?
Yeah,
he's going to play. He's going to play out the entire season, not take 2 weeks off.
I mean, you still average a triple-double and take 2 weeks off in February. He may still do that. You know, I mean, I think it depends on – don't forget, I mean, they're a new-look team as well. They're not as drastically realigned as the Celtics are, but they're still a new-look team, and – Isaiah probably isn't coming back till January, February. So if LeBron's going to take the time off, it better not be right when Isaiah's coming back. I mean, he's a key player, and going into the second half of the season, eventually the playoffs, they have to be humming. So, no, to answer your question, I think LeBron is going to – I'm not saying he's going to play more games. He's not going to rest as much. But I think when he's on that court, he is going to be busting his ass, man. He's going to be looking to really – plus, he's going to be looking to show that – you know, he's still got game, which we know he does. Yeah. And when he could take that game to L.A. with Wade or whoever else he wants to, because he is leaving Cleveland.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think we both agreed on that. Although Russell Westbrook staying in OKC maybe hurts those chances a little bit.
Come on, with that salary.
Paul George might, too. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that LeBron is going to hinge his decision on Russell Westbrook. He's going to go where he wants to go.
Going back to players sitting, though, there's the new rule this year that starts to inhibit players doing that. The Celtics are in the position where they can rest players for the first time in a while. Given the new rule and the new roster, do you think we see the Celtics become one of these teams that maybe only plays the superstars 60 games?
You know, Brad and Kyrie, not so much Gordon, more Brad and Kyrie were talking about that a lot at practice on Friday. I don't think it really changes much. I think Brad Stevens is going to play the game the way he always did. And if a player needs rest, he's going to rest them. Listen, Kyrie, I loved what he said. He said, look, I'm paid to play 82 games. I'm going to be ready for 82 games. Whatever coach decides is what coach decides.
I just love the attitude he brings. And the comments he made on First Take.
Yeah.
It was on First Take with Stephen A.
Yeah. And then LeBron James had that press conference where he continued to call him kid about 5,000 times.
We're at Media Day, and the Cavs Media Day is going on simultaneously as the Celtics. So Jeff Goodman's – I love Jeff. He's one of my favorite people.
Yeah,
so Jeff Goodman is there, and he's got his cell phone out. He kind of flags me over. I look over, and he's got the live feed of the LeBron presser. And he's saying, you know, I gave the kid – I mean, if I added up how many times he said it was unbelievable. And then, you know, condescending him by calling him the kid. Now, I realize I think internally within Cleveland that was kind of his nickname, but he wasn't meaning it that way.
Right.
Not at all.
And all that said, and it happened right before Kyrie was going to go on. He definitely didn't see it. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, every day, every time LeBron speaks – it's making more and more sense. Because my initial thought on Kyrie was, I've never, as much as I'm not a LeBron fan, I have never seen a player on any of the teams he's gone to not want to play with him. From Shaq to Wade to Bosh. I mean, Bosh to a certain extent, I think they had a little. But, you know, but for the most part, most people love to play with LeBron. I'm going like, why doesn't Kyrie, right? And now after that presser and some of the other stuff I've seen, I can be like, yeah, I can see why.
Oh yeah,
I can see why.
Tell me if I'm going too far here. Not to harken back to 2007 again, but the Celtics have had a good team the last couple of years. They played inspired basketball last year, but they really haven't played angry basketball since Kevin Garnett left.
I agree.
Is there a little bit of Kevin Garnett and Kyrie Irving? It seems like there's that little chip on the shoulder, all, like pissed off the second he steps on the floor kind of mentality.
I mean, we had that with Isaiah a bit, but Isaiah was so lovable.
Right.
I think that not to digress too much back to the Big Three era, but when Danny parted with Perk, he also parted with some of that toughness.
Oh, yeah.
You know, KG was amazing, and he was always tough, and he was always in your face. But, you know, KG didn't have that scowl like Perk did, you know. So I agree with you. I mean, in the last couple of years, it has been so hard with this team because they haven't had that guy who's just going to put LeBron on the ground when he drives the lane and take the foul. I think, you know, that may not be Kyrie, but I think it's going to be a guy like Baines. You're going to see him come in off the bench and slap the hammer down. I mean, people are saying Baines is going to start. I don't see it. Maybe early on without Morris being around, but I just don't see it long term. I think he's going to be, and this may be a little bit before your time, guys, but I think he's going to be that Greg Kite guy off the bench who's just going to come in and body slam guys in the paint. And the Celtics need that.
I love angry basketball.
Oh,
I am
too.
So happy to hear that. Yeah. The Florida State, Florida Gulf Coast college game last year in the tournament when it was more football than basketball.
Right.
That's what I want to see.
Yeah,
absolutely. So is there anyone on this team? You know, we've talked about Kyrie, obviously Gordon Hayward. Is there anyone on this team who we're not talking about enough? Who you
Jason Tatum.
So what's his role going to be?
We're not talking about Tatum enough? That's the only guy I hear about.
I'm talking about you guys. You said we. I thought you meant
fair
you
enough.
Two.
Okay, we're not talking about Jason Tatum enough.
I thought you meant the media, but okay.
The media, or you guys?
The media in general. Who's being undersold? But let's get to Jason Tatum because we should talk about him as well. How will his role differ in the beginning of the season to the end of the season? Do you see him coming off the bench playing more minutes as the season goes on? Will he have a set role? Is he going to surpass Jaylen Brown? What's his role going to be on this team?
I think
this year?
The first half of the season is going to be very Jaylen like last year. I think what you're going to see, as far as minutes go, and you know how many times they call his number for shots and whatever else. But I think second half of the season, similarly as with Jaylen, you saw him step up a bit. And I think Tatum is a serious kid, man. I'm just so impressed with him, and his teammates are supremely impressed with him. You talk about having pressure. I mean, when you got a guy like Kyrie or Al Horford saying he's never seen a more NBA-ready guy coming right out of college. And I said, not that Al's copying off of me, clearly not, but I said the exact same thing at Summer League. Yeah, it's only Summer League, but this dude was just so composed and, you know, he's got to gain some weight, but yet he's still pretty strong. I mean, he's smart. I'm a personality guy. I like his personality too. I think he's humble.
And he's got the one thing Jaylen Brown doesn't have, which is the jump shot, right?
Yeah, he's got the jump shot. I mean, I think he's also got a little bit better footwork than Jaylen. I think he's got better offensive instincts, let's say, than Jaylen. Yeah. Jaylen's got to really up his defense this year.
Yeah.
You know.
So you mentioned Al Horford. Let's talk about Al
Love
Horford.
Love Al Horford.
And it seems like the Celtics love him too.
They do.
They haven't, and as of the time we're recording this Monday afternoon, they haven't officially announced a captain yet. The reports are it's de facto Al Horford as it stands right now. Do you see him ending up the official captain, and what do you think of him as the captain?
Well, first of all, if
it is him, or who else would you think it could be?
I mean, I don't think that the Celtics ever name Isaiah the captain. Was he the captain? I don't think so. They went captainless since Rondo left. I believe.
I think you're right.
You know, I don't think it's all that important, but if it's going to be anybody, I think Al's a great candidate. I mean, that's the type of thing Al Horford gives you, and you see it night in and night out in the locker room when we're there or allowed to be in. You see it on the court. He shows up for big games, and he leads by example. He's not a huge box score guy, but he is making everybody around him better, and isn't that the definition of a captain?
Absolutely. So I just want to touch on the loyalty aspect. This offseason, I feel like that was the theme of the NBA offseason. Loyalty.
Come on.
So you have Avery Bradley's gone. Jay Crowder's gone. Isaiah Thomas, he's gone. And not a ton of returners on this team. Does this affect the morale? Does this affect their chances in re-signing anyone?
No.
Or is it just further established that everyone's for themselves, teams and players alike?
I think everybody's just making too big of a deal out of it. Here's what it is, guys. Danny Ainge was not paying Isaiah Thomas a max contract. Period.
Regardless of if that trade went through,
never happening, I don't think.
What about re-signing him in general?
I think he would have re-signed him. And if you notice, I'm trying to remember if it was Grandy. Someone was telling us that Isaiah, he was going to take a hometown. Oh, Gorman. Gorman was telling us. He may take a hometown discount. Maybe it was Grandy and Gorman, which gives him more credibility. And that was kind of the word for a while. And had that happened, I think Danny would have done it. But then all of a sudden, he started with the Brink stuff nonsense again. And, you know, next thing you know it, that injury was way worse than any of us knew. And he was never re-signing him. So I don't blame him. I wouldn't re-sign a 30-year-old, 5'7" guy that's now going to be injury-prone, unfortunately, either. I love Isaiah. Love him. I'm going to miss him. The locker room is going to be so different this year compared to last year. But it was a right move to make, without a doubt. And then Jay Crowder, I mean, Jay Crowder wanted to go. He wanted out. So we can't blame Danny for that, right? Yeah. Avery, I love Avery Bradley, but the salary cap got effed up because of the finals. So basically what happened was the NBA finals did not go the length of games the Celtics needed it to have the salary cap be as high as it should have been. Basically, that's putting it in a nutshell. So less games in the finals, salary cap goes down, no room for Avery Bradley. That was painful for Danny Ainge. Danny Ainge loved Avery Bradley. And if he were on this team, I'd say he should be the captain.
When Avery Bradley was dealt, there weren't even rumblings of Kyrie possibly being moved.
No, it had to go. He had to go.
In a different timeline, though, do you think he's still on? Let's say they make the Kyrie trade early in the summer. Avery's still gone?
I think Avery was gone. And correct me if I'm wrong. It's been a crazy offseason. But I think Avery had to go prior to Hayward to make the space for Hayward.
I think there was a second player. Didn't that have to do with Paul George? And getting the cap for both of them when they thought...
Well, that was the original plan. It's going to be Hayward and Paul George. Yeah.
I thought that they had to make that trade to get the two max deals so they could get both of them in.
I think Gordon agreed to come to the Celtics. And I could be wrong, guys. I could have the time set up wrong. We'll have to look online afterwards. But I believe that they were then trying to clear enough cap space to sign Gordon because of the reduced cap because of the finals. And then Avery, I believe, was traded. That's a hard one to see go, man. I mean, covering him. I mean, back in, what was his rookie year? 2011? 12?
I think it was earlier than that,
10?
Yeah.
So 2000, it was 2010. We were covering the Red Claws a lot. That's kind of how we made our start with getting into the Celtics locker room, was by showing their D-League affiliate a lot of attention when they needed it. And Avery was sent down for, I think, 10 games that year. And we got to know him really well. And he came back just so much better when they called him back up. That's the thing about Avery. Every single summer, he came back with an improved aspect of his game, you know, every year. So it was hard to see him go. But I'm pretty sure in order to sign Hayward to the max dollar that they guaranteed him to come, Avery had to go.
All right, Nick, before we wrap it up here, what do the Celtics have to do for this season to not be a disappointment? Where do they need to finish?
The Eastern Conference Finals. You know?
Win it or make it?
I think at this point it's still a make it situation. You know, I'd like to see it go six or seven games, but I'm not calling it a failed year if they don't get to the finals.
What's being realistic, what's the high point?
The NBA Finals.
Is it realistic to say they have a chance against Golden State?
I mean, anytime you get into a seven-game series with anybody, you have a chance, but I think it's slim to none there, man. I think it's slim to none.
Right, Nick Gelso of CLNS Media. You can check them out online, clnsmedia.com. You're at Nick Gelso on Twitter, right?
At CLNS underscore Nick.
At CLNS Media on Twitter for the company. They'll have Celtics coverage all year long, right? Pre-game, post-game, you guys do it all.
We do it all, man. We will be at the Garden for preseason. We were there for open practice last night. Training camp, it's all on the YouTube channel. Check it out. Thanks, guys. This was fun.
No problem.
In the studio.
Live hopefully, studio. We'll hear from you again when the Celtics are 500 in December. Right?
Hopefully, they will be over 500 and you'll still hear from me. Thanks for the invite.
Absolutely.
Guys.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you. It was worth the trip.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
I love those in-studio guests.
Oh, it's great. It's my favorite thing to do. That's only the second one we've done since we've been here. But next week we might have
one. Except all times Jimmy came in and rambled about soccer.
That's true. He did come in to talk about soccer. And that was a lot of fun.
I had to call him last night to talk.
And Dan Lothian, too.
Dan Lothian, that's true. Of course. I had to call Jimmy last night to talk something business, and he shook me off the phone because there was a Christian Pulisic special on 60 Minutes.
Who cares?
Right? I hope he's listening through the door right now to this. I know he's not because he would have burst in. Anyway, it's Calling It. Alex Barth, Alex Lebowitz. What a week we have. We touched on the Celtics. They open in a couple of weeks, preseason opener Monday night. The big opener is the postseason opener for the Red Sox week. They will start on Thursday afternoon, 4 o'clock. They got all the 4 o'clock games, which is fantastic. We'll be there Sunday.
We will. So I can't wait. First playoff baseball game ever been to.
I've only been to one playoff game in my life, and it was when the Patriots got ruined at home by the Ravens in the AFC Championship.
Yeah, we talked about this. I went to game one in 2010 between the Bruins and the Flyers as a series. They lost in 3-0 lead. Savard with the overtime winner.
Boom.
First game back, I was like seven rows behind the Bruins. Unbelievable.
That was the Wayne Simmons series, right? Wayne Simmons? Game seven?
I think so. Yeah.
So anyway, by the way, we might Periscope from the game at Calling It Podcast on Twitter. We'll see kind of how the game's going. But what I'm hoping for right now, a win for me, is that we're not there watching them face elimination.
Oh, yeah. That's the one thing I'm really concerned about, because that was the case last season.
And it just feels like it's coming again, doesn't it? With the way they limped to the finish?
At least they won the game in which they clinched the division and they didn't lose and then celebrate with champagne. At least they went out winning the division.
But that was the one game they won of, what, their last seven?
Yeah, it's tough. It's looking eerily similar to last season.
I mean, it's going to start with the rotation. We know what this lineup is. We've seen enough, and we'll touch on the one small question mark with the lineup in a bit. But you have Chris Sale game one. Everything would seem it's going to be Drew Pomerantz game two, based on the way he finished season. And then it's just a whole lot of question mark after that. You have Eduardo Rodriguez, who has been hot and cold. You have Rick Porcello, who has been cold but is the reigning Cy Young winner. You have Doug Fister, the veteran who really wasn't supposed to be a part of this team. He sort of limped to the finish. He was hot in August.
He was very good.
But he didn't finish as strong as one would have liked.
No.
And then you have David Price. And that he may be high. I think he's the highest risk and the highest reward.
Keep him in the bullpen. I can't. I
agree with you.
Because you got something working right now. And you have to compare it to an Andrew Miller type. He's a power pitching left-handed guy, and he's doing well. He's excelling in that role. Why move it? Why try to mess that up?
Because if you're down 0-2, who do you feel comfortable with? You have to go with the pitcher you feel most comfortable with in Game 3, and that might be Price.
Yeah, but you have
what's
to,
the point
you have to plan that out before the series. So it's not like situationally Farrell's going to be like, okay. I think
not necessarily. If you use him for three innings in game one, he could start game three with the off day in there. Because if he pitched on Thursday, you wouldn't pitch him on Friday if he threw three innings on Thursday. You have Saturday off. You could start him on 2 days rest in game three and just hope you get five out of him.
You could. That's like a desperation move. That's the only way I'm considering it.
If it's a 1-1 series, no, Price is staying in the bullpen.
Yeah.
You come home down 0-2. I think Price is your guy. I think he has to be. I don't think they can plan this rotation out before the series. And they will, in theory, they will list their three starters. But I think that's all going to be subject to change, because given how hot and cold every pitcher on this team has been, every pitcher, including Chris Sale. I think you really need to play it by ear. I don't rule out Chris Sale starting on short notice in game three, short rest.
Maybe game four. So who do you have? Who's the third and fourth starter? Or who's the third? We'll start with the third. Who's the third starter for this team?
I think if you win one of the first two, you go Rodriguez, because he has, as much as he struggled, his numbers against the Indians are actually pretty good.
You mean the Astros?
The Astros, yes, pardon me. His numbers against the Astros, they're actually, it's good against both teams. He blew up against bad teams this year. He pitched well against good teams, which is weird to say. But if it's 1-1, it's Rodriguez. I don't know, if you go back 0-2, though, that would be Rodriguez's first playoff start. Am I correct?
He started a lot. It was Porcello, Price, and Erod, yeah.
He started game three last year? No, he didn't start game three. Didn't Price start game three last year? No, Price started game two.
I know Erod had a start.
But still, I'm not putting the kid in that situation, and I know Price has that history in the postseason, but
I'm going with.
You going with Fister?
I'm going with the Fist.
I don't.
He's proven himself in the playoffs. He's a guy.
How does he make the postseason roster?
You don't think? Well, if he starts, it's the only way.
Right, but yeah, I guess.
What if you start? Who's going to be more of
one of these six is being left off the roster. Even if David Price is in the bullpen,
it's going to be Erod or Porcello, I think. And it's probably closer to Erod, since he missed time and he's not the veteran. Fister is the one guy on the team who actually has success in the playoffs, who's been very good in the playoffs. As a starter, he's like a 2 ERA. I know he's not the pitcher he was with the Tigers or even the Nationals, but we saw it. He showed glimpses of being a solid three starter for this team, and I think he's you get to that point in the postseason when it really matters, and this is why I think Chris Sale is going to excel in the postseason. Veterans will show up when it matters the most.
I am scared to watch Chris Sale. He's never pitched this many innings in a season. His arm's falling off.
You saw what he did when he was going for 300 strikeouts, though. He went 8 shutout innings because he knew that this is on the line and I got to perform because of this milestone.
I know. I'm not saying he can't do that, but this isn't, you know, the Red Sox branded it as Sale Day. You kind of woke up and you knew the Red Sox were going to win that morning.
Yes.
I don't have that feeling with this game. I don't. Now, I'm not saying he's going to come out and suck. I don't have the confidence that I did when it was July.
If he starts out hot, if he shuts him out in the first inning, he's going to pitch. Well. No, that's going to tell you everything
you need
to know.
It's going to dictate early. I'll say the first two, because you get into those 4, 5, and 6 hitters, and you know, even a good first inning, those guys can still shake you. It's big that he didn't pitch against Houston at least an extended amount that series. That was huge.
Definitely.
Because they didn't get a look at him. Definitely. How about the... So, all right, so you're going Fister.
I'm going Sale, Pomerantz, Fister, four's up in the air. I'm probably leaning towards Porcello, though.
I'm going Sale, Pomerantz. I'll say this. Price or Fister at 3, the other one ends up in the pen, and then Rodriguez is 4.
So you potentially want 4 of your playoff starters being all lefties? You want all lefties?
That's what they've done all season.
To an extent. I mean, they've had Porcello and Fister.
This time of year, and the baseball metrics people are going to hate me for this, throw righty lefty out the window. Put your best pitchers on the mound.
I do agree.
It's different in the bullpen, and I want to touch on that in a second. Yep. But when it comes to starting pitching in the playoffs, you know, it's like the NBA. It's great having a nice little rotation and having different units that can do all these different things during the regular season. When you get to the playoffs, put your 5 best players on the floor for 40 minutes a night and let them win you the game.
Yeah.
I'd say give me the 3, 4 best pitchers, even 3. If you have to go Chris Sale in game 4, give me the best pitcher available every night. That's how I would do it. Now, in the bullpen, it gets a little more interesting. This team doesn't have an 8th inning guy. And if Price is going to start, I'm not comfortable with Addison Reed. I don't know if I'm comfortable with Carson Smith. I don't even know if he makes the postseason roster. They're going to need these starters to go distance. That's what I'm hesitating about, putting Price in the starting rotation. You're going to need that bridge guy, because there's, outside of Kimbrel, we've seen how much Matt Barnes only reliable to an extent. Same with Brandon Workman. I mean, he's been good, and he does have a good history in the playoffs. He probably is somebody they can lean on. I'm not sold. Let's say, you know, with Drew Pomerantz, and this is the one thing that I'm hesitant with Pomerantz in the playoffs. Drew Pomerantz has been good this year, but for 6 innings, and that's just about it. Who's pitching in the 7th and 8th to get you to Kimbrel if Price is in the rotation, or if Price pitched the day before?
Well, they're dealing with injuries, too. What's the status with Joe Kelly? I feel like
he's back.
Is he back?
Isn't he back? He's back.
I haven't seen him in a while. I feel like he probably is back. That's a guy who, he was the only pitcher who actually did well last ALDS. That went so overlooked. He was the one guy who was actually solid. You still have Addison Reed.
I don't trust Addison Reed.
You see, but he's better than whatever else you got. Another thing you can
do. Does the bullpen concern you, though?
A little bit, but...
What concerns you more, the bullpen or the starting rotation?
The starting rotation.
See, I'm more concerned by the bullpen.
Okay, so how about this? We're talking about how there's...
Even if Price is in the bullpen. I mean, it lessens it, but even if Price is in the bullpen...
What if both Price and Erod are in the bullpen? Would you put 2 starting pitchers in the bullpen?
No, not 2 starting pitchers that are lefties. If it's going to be 2, it's going to be Price and
Porcello?
Fister. Price and Fister. It's going to... Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if Price is in the starting rotation, Erodie, you're not going to have 2 lefties or 2 righties. I could see you having 2, but... And again, this goes back to starting pitchers, give me the best ones, and then work your bullpen to the splits after that.
Yeah, and I agree with that. But I'm worried about this entire pitching staff. You're going up against one of the best offenses in the MLB, and it's going to be tough to beat them. You need to get good performances out of Chris Sale and Drew Pomerantz. That's what it comes down to. It comes down to those 2 guys at the end of the
day.
And if they pitch well, game 1 and game 2, and Benintendi continues to play well, Bogarts builds off of what he has done, and Betts, you know, continues to swings a hot bat, obviously they're in good shape. Big if, though. And I'm more concerned with this pitching staff and the starting rotation working out and stumping this Astros team more than anything.
Which game's bigger for them to win, game 1 or game 2?
Game 1. Your best pitcher's on the mound. You got to win game 1.
I agree. Look, if we're there Sunday in the bleachers and the Red Sox have a win under their belt, I'm going to feel really good because you take one in Cleveland, you flip home field advantage, and it's Fenway Park, man. Like Nick was saying earlier, the Garden's the sixth man for the Celtics. I know how big of a Celtics fan Nick is, and he told us he's not a Red Sox fan, right? Mm-hmm. But as much of a boost as the Garden is, I would put the Garden as the third stadium in Boston sports. And remember, there's only three.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely the third. Fenway Park's obviously number one. And for people I know who've gone to every playoff game, best atmosphere's at Fenway Park.
And this Astros, they're not experienced. They don't have this Red Sox team last year, even though they got swept, that was a valuable sweep.
Yeah.
Because it was a young team. Mm-hmm. They have that at Benintendi, Betts, Bogarts. Bogarts already had the experience from 13, but they have that postseason experience now. One more thing I want to touch on. We're running out of time. So real quick, Eduardo Nunez, we're still waiting to see if he's going to be able to play. He's doing a sim game today, Monday. What kind of moronic organization has a position player do a sim game? Are you going to have him go sit in the dugout for an hour and a half at a time in between at-bats? He's just taking infield, outfield, and batting practice. You don't need to call it a sim game. And I'm worried because he's going to be important, whether it's replacing Hanley as the DH or Devers moving to DH and Nunez at third, or giving Pedroia days off if he needs them. This seems like the kind of stupid thing that the Red Sox would butcher, having a position player go with a sim game. I don't understand it. I don't like it. They need whatever it is for Nunez. And I think we talked about this off the air, and I'm racing through it because we got to hit the break.
Yeah.
I think Ramirez is the odd man out for the most point, with Devers going to DH, and then if Pedroia needs a day off occasionally, Nunez helps you do that. Because Brock Holt should not – I'm going to start going off here. Brock Holt should not be on
that
roster.
He's not on the roster.
Please, give me Devin Marrero over Brock Holt. At least you get the glove.
Yeah, maybe not that far.
Are you worried about them, whatever the hell's going on with Nunez down there?
No, because they do have the depth. If he's not in the lineup, it's not a killer. If he is, I agree with you. Hanley's the odd man out. You keep Pedroia at second base. He's too valuable of a glove, and he's been a good hitter. Devers, you know, I love his bat, and I think he's a great boost. Hanley's the one guy who, you know, will be valuable off the bench.
He's going to be a great pinch hitter for sure. Real quick here before we throw to a break, when we come back on Monday, will there still be a Red Sox season to talk about?
What was that?
When we come back on Monday, will there still be a Red Sox season to talk about next Monday?
Yeah, I don't think they're getting swept. At least I'm telling myself that.
I don't want them to. There's been too many similarities to last year. I'm nervous.
Hey, that's only natural.
But you know what? There's only one team that makes my skin crawl in Boston more than the Red Sox, and that's the Boston Bruins. We'll talk about that after the break. Keep it here, calling it.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
You're not going to join in?
I like watching you do it.
Thank you.
You're great. You're an expert in the
Zombie Nation, Kern Craft 400.
Yeah, it's amazing. I just associate that with hockey, though. Like, it's fitting that we have this here, because, like, I don't know what Zombie Nation. I know it as, like, a hockey thing.
The Bruins goal song.
Yeah.
I mean, we used to set up in the driveway when we were playing street hockey, have the iPod ready, and as soon as you scored, you had to run over to the iPod and press play, and it was all queued up.
For people in Chicago, it's
Chelsea Dagger.
Yeah,
Chelsea Daggers are great. The Bruins kind of need a new goal song. I liked it when I was younger. I don't know. They have one of the best horns.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The Queen Mary, but I don't know. I could go for a new song. Chelsea Dagger's perfect.
It really is. They have it figured out.
Who's the team that has this? Remember the old Vonage commercials? The stupid people do stupid things commercials. It was
that's Chicago, I thought.
No, I'm tone deaf. No, there's another one, but it's the Vonage commercial. That's also a good one. I don't know. The Bruins could do better. There's one in NHL 18 that's like this really campy like band song. It's not anybody's goal song. It's a custom thing, but it's pretty funny.
The goal for the goal song is to piss off your opponent as much as possible. If it's annoying, you did it right.
Yeah. So. Same with the horn. Yeah. All right. There's actual hockey to discuss, though. It's a big season for the Bruins this year. First season with the new head coach.
Yeah.
Some of this young talent we've been hearing about for years and years is going to be up. And the window's closing on Patrice Bergeron. I'm not going to throw Zdeno Chara in there because I don't think he's a guy whose window will ever close. Not in a Tom Brady way.
He'll be serviceable.
Right.
Yeah.
Given his size and his intelligence, he'll always be a player who can contribute. He's not the player he once was, but he'll always be a player who can contribute, especially under Bruce Cassidy. Bergeron, though, is a guy who's, I mean, he's been banged up over his career. You can see his skills. I don't want to say starting to fade, but he's no longer growing as a player, which leads you to believe that it's going to flip the other way sooner rather than later. And, you know, Marchand's getting up there, too. I'm not calling them an old team. I'm not calling Brad Marchand old, but this is where, as we've been hearing for years, the plan was when they got to this point, the young talent was going to come up, fill in the holes, and they were going to compete.
That's not the case.
You don't think that look, they're not going to win a cup this year.
They're a playoff team.
Cole, take me on that. They better be a playoff team.
Yeah.
They absolutely better be a playoff team. Yeah. But can the young talent get them further than they were last year, which was what, one playoff win? Two playoff wins against Ottawa first round?
Yeah, I think two.
You think they can go further than that this year?
Yeah. I mean, they didn't get any worse. Like, who did they?
Oh, I mean, no Stafford.
That's true.
They lost. Who'd they lose in the expansion draft? They lost.
They kept McQuaid.
Was it Morrow?
I think it may have been Morrow. They didn't lose anything.
You're right. They didn't get any. But they didn't get
it's
any.
It's not like they didn't pick up any big free agent.
They didn't get any better. Their big offseason move was re-signing David Pastrnak. It's about time they did that.
Yeah.
Too close to the draft.
Took a long time.
But, you know, and it leaves questions because maybe their biggest loss was their deadline acquisition last year in Drew Stafford, who just signed for an $800,000 contract. And I don't know why the Bruins couldn't pay him that. There's a huge gaping hole at right wing now.
Yeah.
And I was talking to people today. I was at a golf tournament in Westford, talking to some Bruins fans. They had no idea. Everybody's thrown out different names for that right wing. Whether it's David Backes taking him off the center again, a guy like Noel Achari moving Pastrnak back up there, or even one of the young guys like Anders Bjork.
You're going to have to move someone because they don't have the depth right now. Like, who's going to be their first line right wing? It's tough to say. There's going to have to be some movement there.
Do you trust them putting a rookie with those? Because it looks like that's what they're going to do. The lines of practice today had Bjork up there with them.
Yeah, it seems like that's going to be their move. I don't think it's necessarily bad. They got a lot of young players on this team. You got to have confidence on your young guys if you want to excel with the roster that they have. And again, you talk about Marchand and Bergeron getting up there in age. They're still in their prime. Maybe not Bergeron as much. He's still a serviceable player. Marchand's still in his prime. He'll still be an elite goal scorer. So they're going to have to rely on their younger guys if they want to improve at all. And they got a couple of those younger guys who will take a step up. McAvoy, Pastrnak. They got a bunch of youth on this team. And if they can't rely on it, then they're screwed.
I don't get why they can't put Pastrnak on the first line. And I understand you want to spread out your talent, but the Bruins haven't had that go-to line. Even with Marchand and Bergeron, that kill shot line, they haven't had that. Really, they didn't even have it necessarily when they won the Cup, because that was a more defensive team. I think if you put Pastrnak on that first line, it becomes a kill shot line. And granted, it does give you issues further down, but that line should give you at least a goal a game if it's Marchand, Bergeron, and Pastrnak. It really should.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a huge another problem. Like, what, their third and fourth line, big question marks there.
But there's going to be question marks. That, look, Pastrnak's not fixing your third or fourth line. If he's down there, Bruce Cassidy needs to be shipped the hell out of Boston.
No, he needs to be a top two line, obviously. So it's all about the best fit, and you got to have a balance.
Can I throw out an interesting maybe solution for the fourth line?
What's this?
Moving David Krejci down to the fourth line.
Really?
I know he's a really good player, but they have an excess of centers, okay? They have David Backes, who can play the center. They still have Spooner and Nash. Remember, Jacob Forsbacka, Carlson, JFK, he's here this year. He's their top prospect. I'm really excited to see him. What's Krejci's biggest issue? What's it always been? He doesn't stay healthy,
yeah.
Right? He can't. So if you put him on the fourth line, you limit his minutes. He can be effective in spots. It's something I think would be worth trying. And they have some good guys who aren't going to play above the fourth line, but are good fourth line players. Noel Achari, Matt Beleski, those kind of guys. I wouldn't hate, you know, JFK as your third center, Backes as your second, and then Krejci on the fourth. I know he's better than a fourth line player, but for the money you're investing in him, which is huge, keep him healthy, and the best way to do that may be to limit his minutes and play him on that fourth line. And look, if you get him out there matched up with the other team's fourth line, you know he's going to dominate. It's going to make him look better. They can't trade this guy at this point, which would be the ideal situation. I don't think they can trade him. I think his medical history is too well known and too feared by other teams. But I think if you put him, I know I sound like a lunatic, but if you put him on the fourth line, I think you're going to get more from him over 82 games on the fourth line than you would for maybe 40 on the second line, because you know he's missing time with those injuries.
Yeah. I still don't think the production's going to outweigh what he would have if he was on a higher line. If you put him on the fourth line, you're just burying him. And maybe he's going up against worse competition.
Well, remember, the Bruins like to run four deep. They don't really run three deep.
That's true. They have a lot of depth. They like to flaunt it. And that makes sense. Still, he's one of your most skilled players. You got to have him be a major part of that team, a part of that forward group.
I know this role doesn't exist in hockey the way it does in basketball, but Manu Ginobili's always been a top three player on the Spurs, and he comes off the bench, and that's part of what makes him so lethal, is when the other team's tired, he comes in and
So are you putting the fourth line out there more often? Because he's still playing 30-35 minutes a game as a sixth man.
Okay, so it's not a perfect example. I'd probably play them more than other fourth lines. I'd still give them the fourth most minutes, but I think it gives him a really good chance to be effective.
If you got a couple young guys that you want to put more of a workload on and you want to have develop, you know, quicker, because the reality is, again, they got a lot of these young guys, stick them with Krejci. It'll make them better. It will probably improve. It may not improve Krejci's play, but it'll improve the production of that fourth line. I'm not completely opposed to it. I just think he's better suited top three line, top two line.
How about defensemen? So we got Chara and Carlo. That'll be a pairing. You know, McQuaid's going to be out there. You know, Krug's going to be out there when he gets healthy. After that, it's a question, and Charlie McAvoy will probably factor in. Here's what I want to see as a pairing, is Matt Grzelcyk and Torrey Krug. And nobody's talked about Matt Grzelcyk the last couple of years. I know he's a bit undersized, but so is Torrey Krug. The BU presence on this team is awesome. I love having local talent. I think Grzelcyk is a guy who can be a special player if you put him in the right spot. And if there's one thing we saw from Bruce Cassidy in the second half of last season after Claude, he can take these kind of specialized players and get the most out of them. And to me, Matt Grzelcyk is that player. There should be three BU Terriers playing regular minutes for the Bruins next year between JFK, McAvoy, and Grzelcyk.
Yeah, especially if I love the pairing of Carlo with Chara. He's literally half his age. It's hilarious to see out there.
See, the one thing, if that goes south quick, though, I think there could be a quick trigger in moving McAvoy up with Chara.
Yeah, potentially.
Because Carlo, as good as he is, turnover machine, penalty machine, he's a good player, but I don't know if I want him getting those kind of minutes.
And is Chara your first pairing?
He's got to be. He's the captain. He has to be.
He's, okay.
And he's still shown he can play the minutes. Look, he hasn't had any injuries.
I mean, he's so well conditioned that it's ridiculous.
It's what 40-year-old athletes do in this town, man.
6'9", 40-year-old athlete, too. Like, the guy's huge. You'd think he'd have, like, an enlarged heart or something. But he just keeps going out there and being a productive player. And he's someone who's adjusted with age, which is great to see from athletes who are that old. It'll also be interesting to see how Adam McQuaid, Kevin Miller fit in. Two guys who have contributed in years past. What's going to happen with them with Carlo coming up?
I think
with
Kevin
McAvoy
Miller,
coming up.
Kevin Miller could be a ninth floor guy this year.
Yeah, definitely.
I think they're at least to start. Real quick on the goalies before we throw to a break, because ultimately this season's going to either go or not go based on Tuukka Rask. Hopefully can man up this year. The one guy I want to see is Zane McIntyre. I liked what I saw from him last year. He still has a long way to go. He needs the experience. But keep getting this kid NHL reps. I believe he can be an NHL goalie. The last person I want to see in the NHL Subban. This year. Oh, God. Keep him out. Keep him out.
He's been brutal.
Khudobin's a fine backup. Give McIntyre the reps as he needs. There's no reason for Subban. I understand why Subban's on the roster. Two-way contracts are too valuable to not pick up. But, oh, my God. Was that a bad pick?
Oh, it was awful. It really has not panned out. And I was surprised he's 23, although it makes sense.
He was drafted really young.
Really young, 17, 18 years old, whatever he was. But he's been in the system forever, and he just has not gotten much better. Khudobin, he's a suitable backup. But it really, like, what about Rask?
It's the mental toughness thing. It's David Price with him. It's not as bad, but
is his window closing with the Bruins?
It's tough. He's so inconsistent, it's tough to tell. That's what they need from him this year. The one thing you need at a goalie above all else is consistency.
Absolutely.
And that's Tuukka Rask some nights is the best goaltender in the world. And there are some nights you wonder if Malcolm Subban should be in the NHL. And it's not even that. It's just he quits. He quits, and it's an issue. But if the Bruins only need to use three goalies this year, they should be fine. If they get into four goalies like they did last year, then it's going to be a major issue. Speaking of major issues, we got not even a team, one guy to talk about. If you watch the Patriots game Sunday, I'm putting somebody in the crosshairs. Yeah. Coming up right after this, you're listening to Calling It.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
So, it's all well and good. Red Sox in the playoffs. Yeah. Garden's getting ready to, you know, see some action again. That's cool. That's always fun. But the Patriots, I didn't think we'd be sitting here on October 2nd and the Patriots be the team we'd be complaining about.
Yeah, it's a shocker. The 16-0 talks ended after week one, but still, they were 14-win team.
Which was fine. Yeah, that was a tough game, tough opponent.
They're not a 14-win team anymore. I mean, that's evident. They might be a 2-3 team by the end of the week.
Yeah, no, they will be. They're going to be a 5-5 team at some point.
It's discouraging. So what's a bigger problem? Lack of talent or lack of communication?
Neither. Stephon Gilmore. It's bad. And look, I hate it when people blame one person for a loss in football. That's not the way football works. It's generally a team effort. First time in my life I'm blaming a singular player because, believe it or not, the rest of the defense I thought played pretty well. They had some issues up front against the run, but Stephon Gilmore doesn't know the coverages. He doesn't know the playbook. I say that 99% sure. The only way I could be more sure is if he told me.
There really hasn't been a player that the Patriots have signed that has been this frustrating from a getting acclimated standpoint. Or not even that. There probably has been, but they've never signed that guy to a $40 million contract.
Right. With Ocho Cinco, it was fine. You were taking a flyer on an old man.
This is a guy they have to be committed
5 years. What is it? $72 million?
I'm not sure the exact numbers, but it's at least 30 guaranteed, right?
Something, look, 20? Something like that. When he's following Malcolm Butler across the field, he clearly doesn't know the man coverage assignments. And you heard Daron Harmon say it in the locker room post game, and some other players said it too. We're making it as simple as we can. You never want your play calling, offense or defense, to be simple in football. The reason you simplify play calling is generally for new additions. That's why it's a very black and white playbook in the preseason, because you don't want to give anything away. So to say we're making it as simple as we can, to me, is Daron Harmon and other members of this team calling out Stephon Gilmore and saying he doesn't know the playbook or he can't comprehend it. Because I saw him play in Buffalo. He's not a great player. He's not worth the money they gave him, but he is good enough to handle the Patriots' basic defensive playbook. Week one or two, if he doesn't understand it, fine. He didn't play much in the preseason. But the level of coverage they're running now, which is high school, this is a high school defense, and he still can't grasp it. This is not a talent issue. I'm not even saying that it's an effort issue in terms of him trying hard on the field. I don't think he ever learned the playbook. And it's do your job, right? If all 11 members do your job, 1/11th, where we went to college, Mike Welch, head coach at the college, it was all about do your 1/11th.
Yeah.
If everybody does their 1/11th, there's no problem. But as soon as Stephon Gilmore's out of position, because he doesn't know the playbook, then somebody's got to cover up for him, and somebody's got to cover up for that guy, and cover up for that guy, and then the whole defense is out of position. They could have had Lawrence Taylor on the field 10 times, and they still would have lost. The defensive line was getting there. The most of the coverage was fine. I thought Malcolm Butler, outside of one bad play, looked good. I thought Eric Rowe was fine until he got injured. Devin McCourty, I thought, actually had a pretty good game. But when Stephon Gilmore's coming out there with that effort, not even effort, with whatever the hell it was that he was doing. With the greatest quarterback, Brady put them in position to win that game. With the greatest quarterback
phenomenal
of all time, you have no chance if one of your corners is just going to leave his side of the field open. Because he either doesn't know the play call, or he's freelancing. And remember what happened to the last guy here who freelanced. He's playing in Cleveland now.
Yeah.
But newsflash, they can't trade Stephon Gilmore like they traded Jamie Collins. Not for another half a decade.
It'd have to be a dump, and they'd get nothing in return.
No, they would have to give up a high pick, which Belichick won't do.
It's unfortunate. It's a guy you spent a lot of money on, really preparing for the fact that Malcolm Butler would be gone. And by the way, imagine if Malcolm Butler isn't on this team right now. How screwed they are.
Oh, my God.
That would be brutal.
So imagine if they lose Eric Rowe for any period of time.
Well, it sounds like he's not coming back this week.
I can't imagine. And I hate Thursday night football. That's a huge reason why. Dumb. Short it's week, dumb. I highly doubt he's playing Thursday. If he's active, it's in a very, very limited. If he's active, I think that is less about his condition and more about how they feel about Stephon Gilmore.
Absolutely. And when you have a short turnaround, now do I think Gilmore will turn around? That's another good question. I think he will. I think he'll be fine. I just do, because it's not a talent issue. It's a system issue. Will he get acclimated?
It's not a system issue. He, in theory, should be a great cornerback for this system.
He'll get there. He will get there.
Like, well, it can't get any worse.
That's another good point.
I love to be hypothetical. I love to use hyperbole. I can't think of any way to make this worse than he left his half of the field wide open to double cover a slot corner in five wide man coverage.
Yeah. It was awful. It was terrible. It's as if he still thinks he's on the Bills and he's supposed to guard Malcolm Butler instead of the opposing
team.
Right,
that flies with the Bills. The penalties, too. The first hands to the face, yeah, that's a ticky-tack call. We all know Jerome Boger sucks. Mm-hmm. And that's just known throughout football. But, and this is what sets the Patriots apart from other teams in the NFL. When you know that that's the call, you don't go back and do the same damn thing on the same side of the field to the same receiver in front of the same official. That's what used to separate the Buffalo Bills and the New England Patriots. The Bills did stupid crap like that. The Patriots don't. And Stephon Gilmore's still playing like he's in Buffalo.
Don't you think it could just be a player having a bad game, though? Because I'm not reacting like you are. I don't think he...
I'm sorry. I couldn't tell if I was reacting.
I think he's still a good player. I think he just had a really, really bad game. That happens. From listening to him in press conferences, he's not a dumb guy. He knows football. He made a ton of mistakes yesterday. He made a ton of mistakes. I think he can get back to a point where he is a legitimate number two, maybe even number one cornerback. He has a talent. It's about getting acclimated, and they have the coaching to correct a problem like this. He might not start on Thursday. It's a quick turnaround.
Well, who else is going to at this point?
Jonathan Jones. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes with
him.
That's
it. All right. Well, the problem is Jonathan Jones is – actually, Jonathan Jones is 6'1".
He's big. He's a big
guy. You need the size on
Thursday. Especially
with
Butler. It's not like he's going to be covering anyone.
I would think he'll be on – actually, Jonathan Jones might be good because he's fast. He ran a 4.2.
Yeah.
So you put him on Jackson with Harmon over the top, and you put Butler on
– Evans is huge,
Evans
too.
With McCourty over the top. And then, I don't know, you hope the next corner up, whoever it may be, can take care of Adam Humphries.
Mm-hmm.
Cameron Brate had a real good game yesterday.
Yeah,
I'm worried about him. I mean, that's going to be Patrick Chung, who hasn't looked good this season.
The entire defense, with the exception of a few guys, has not looked as good as they
and
are.
But I think it all goes back to Stephon. I think the defense has looked better than the numbers appear. Stephon Gilmore, he gave up, by my count, 10 third down conversions yesterday. 7 through blown 10? Coverage. There were 7 times on third down that it appeared either he was in the wrong coverage or Matt Patricia doesn't know how to draw up defense. What? And I know Matt Patricia knows how to draw this up. So it's 7 out of position and 3 on penalties.
How much of this falls on the coaching then? Like, because you mentioned Matt Patricia.
Okay.
If he doesn't know the system, it's like he's still a professional athlete. You got to think he's putting some effort into it.
That's a very good question. But if it's a first-year coaching staff, I am totally on them and saying Stephon Gilmore didn't get the right assignments, whatever. We've never seen anything remotely close to this in New England. Never. And Belichick wouldn't start leaving a rock unturned now.
And this could be a problem because the reason we have never seen something like this is, goes back to my original point. They've never signed a guy to a contract like this, one, at all. Like, it's so unpatriot-like. And you know, when they take on these players, they cut them pretty quickly before they become that big of a problem. They can't do that with Stephon Gilmore. Nope. They're stuck with him. So that's an issue. We have to wait and see if he does come around. I think it's still possible. I'm not giving up hope on the guy. He's a talented player.
He's got a long way. Look, I'm not done with him yet either, but he's got a long way to. This is, you know, stuff you should learn first week of training. These are mistakes you make first week of
training.
But he didn't
make
them week 4.
He didn't make them week 2 or 3 as much.
He did. It was under the radar. You go back and watch the L-22, he did. And now it's on tape. That's why it looked so bad last week. Because now it's on tape. It wasn't on tape before. It goes back to the Kansas City game. He was blowing coverages against Kansas City. He was okay against New Orleans. Houston, he didn't have a great game even with the interception. That ball was thrown right to him. Part of the reason he was there is he was out of position. And now it's on tape. Now teams can see it.
And maybe that's another reason why Carolina excelled. They saw it before anyone else, and they exploited that.
No, Cam Newton played great. It was a great game plan for them. I all the credit to the Carolina Panthers. They came in with the way they – what do the Patriots do so often? They find the weak link on the defense, the weakest corner, and they just throw
they
at
attack him
20 times a game. Now, it's normally not the $15 million a year corner, but that's exactly – the Panthers figured out it was, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, it was a great game plan. I mean, that's another, you know.
Right, the Panthers played well.
Yeah, it's not like they have an amazing wide receiving core. No. Cam Newton did a very good job, and Rivera and that coaching staff did a great job at game planning around the weak link of this defense. And he, just countless penalties, countless blown coverages.
All by the same player.
And it's just such a shame that an offensive performance like the one that Brady put up was not enough. They were down 30-16.
I know.
They had a comeback in store, and imagine it would have been like the third straight comeback victory.
I was getting I had my tweet ready. I'm just going to start watching these games in the fourth quarter.
Honestly, like that's how it has been, but it's blown because of that third down hands to the face penalty from Stephon Gilmore. And the reason why Carolina had the lead that they did in the first place was because he blew so many coverages and was making those mistakes. It's something to get totally frustrated about. It's not the end-all be-all, and it's not like it's not repairable. Like, you can still fix this. And you know, historically, the Patriots, in month one of the season, have been brutal.
I feel like you're being the voice of reason, which is good, because I need somebody to kind of outweigh my hot takes. But are you concerned?
I think it will come around. I think they have talent, and they have good coaching.
You didn't answer my question.
Am I concerned?
About Stephon, not the Patriots. I'm actually not concerned about the team as a whole because of Tom Brady. But are you concerned about Stephon Gilmore individually?
I mean, I'd be crazy not to be somewhat concerned.
That's all I need to hear. One more take I want to throw out real quick before we go. The Patriots went under the radar last week. Taylor Heinicke, I think is his name. They signed a quarterback from Old Dominion, dual threat quarterback. Mm-hmm. He's on the practice squad. The Patriots are going to need to make a move at the deadline, it seems like. Probably for a corner, maybe a pass catcher. Although the offense looked great yesterday. We're not talking about them because they've been so good. There's nothing to talk about. And people said Malcolm Butler's on the trade block. Alan Branch's name has been thrown out there. Did they sign this other quarterback because they're getting ready to move Garoppolo?
I don't think so. I think they would have traded Garoppolo a while ago if they ever even considered it. I don't know why Garoppolo's on this team. I think if they haven't traded him at this point, though, they're not going to trade him anytime soon.
I think they wanted to see what Brady looked like at 40. And I think they like what they see. I wouldn't be shocked if they move Garoppolo for a corner.
It could happen. They're not moving Butler anymore.
Look at the teams with the premier corners in the league. They all need a quarterback. Washington, Arizona. These teams need a young quarterback. Well, what team doesn't need a young quarterback? But, I mean, a guy like Patrick Peterson, a guy like Josh Norman. Realistically, Garoppolo should get you that guy. And the Patriots don't normally sign quarterbacks in the middle of the year like this. Yeah. So it's a red flag. It flew under the radar, but it's a red flag to me.
It could also be the fact that they got rid of Brissett and they needed it to fill that.
Oh, no, it could be that. They could just be concerned about the number of hits Tom Brady's taking.
It's not out of question that they trade Garoppolo, though. Nothing's out of question with that team. They traded Jamie Collins, who was a stud, considered a stud last year. No one saw that
coming. It could be they just wanted a mobile quarterback on the practice squad for
Cam Newton.
Right, Cam Newton and whoever else they'll play this year, kind of as a scout team guy. You know what? But they signed a third quarterback.
They did.
That should say. I take it for what it's worth. I think, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo maybe should be looking over his shoulder. They have to do something with him this offseason. They have to either franchise him or re-sign him. They're not just going to let him walk. Bill wouldn't hold on to him for what he did last year to let him walk. I'm even fine if they trade him for a first-round pick. If they can get Marlon Humphrey, that guy's going to be dangerous in Bill Belichick's hands. He can play like seven positions. From Alabama. I'm not even going to give up his corner, safety,
Peppers.
Whatever. No, he's like Jabril. And he's much better than Cyrus Jones, for the record. Cyrus Jones is a good kick returner. That was it. Cyrus Jones was never – he was an okay corner in college. He was a great kick returner. That's why the Pats took him. Marlon Humphrey is a top five defensive player in college football right now. Whatever they get for Garoppolo would probably be worth it. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. Next week, we will either have our Red Sox post-mortem or more Red Sox, I guess. We'll be recapping a Patriots game. What else next week? Celtics and Bruins, too. It's all on the table. College basketball right around the corner. We didn't get to touch on the scandal this week. I wish we had. We'll get to it at some point, though. Rick Pitino being a scumbag is never going away.
Ricky P, baby.
All right, so that's going to do it. He's Alex Lovitz. I'm Alex Barth. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Callin' It Podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and SoundCloud as well. We will talk to you next week. Everybody enjoy the playoffs. It's going to be a heck of a week. Enjoy Thursday night. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.